Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, and wonderful to have you aboard. Hopefully everyone had a nice weekend. We would like to have you join us, as we always like to have you do. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us this morning, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. I need a re-entry expediter on Mondays.
Yeah.
The space program has those.
Right. You just sort of help you get back into the...
Yeah, re-entry expediter.
Yes. I like that. I like that a lot, actually. I think we need that on a T-shirt. University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is in the house.
Good morning. I have nothing witty to say.
Okay. And you always do.
That's witty.
And political consultant Libby Post joins us, as she does each and every Monday. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. I haven't left last week yet, so... You know, I don't need to re-enter
still,
this week.
Still working, yeah. Still working on that.
Yeah,
finishing that up. We have lots to talk about and a lot going on in the news. So we'll start as soon as my computer allows me to. There we go. There we go. Okay, let's start with what's happening in China. The headline being U.S. tries candor to assure China on cyber attacks. In the months before Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's arrival in Beijing on Monday, the Obama administration quietly held an extraordinary briefing for the Chinese military leadership on a subject officials have rarely discussed in public: the Pentagon's emerging doctrine for defending against cyber attacks against the United States and for using its cyber technology against adversaries, including the Chinese. The meeting will take place today. What do we make of this?
It's weird. The whole thing is really weird. Here's why. We have been treated, and I can't cite a source for you, I'm sorry, but we've been treated to the idea, maybe it's amorphous, maybe it's coming through the, you know, the wind, that the Chinese are always after us with their stuff. Cyber attacks. Now we hear and read in the paper that the U.S. is actually being very candid with the Chinese and saying, explaining our approach to them and to everybody else. Well, once again, it gives us the concept that we really don't know what's being done in our behalf. That's why, as we've talked about so many times here, when somebody blows the whistle on what some of the things that this country is doing, it becomes very important, because we're an uninformed electorate. I'm confused as to whether the Chinese started it, whether we started it. It sounds like we're starting it. And that is a very troubling concept. Why, if you were a sovereign state, would you not object to being attacked with cyber stuff? I don't get it.
My flip answer is that there's no need for the United States officials to be candidate, because Edward Snowden already leaked this. Exactly. They already know much of what we're doing. Exactly. And the other thing that struck me is that you're right, Alan. We now probably know, as the people who elect officials here, we probably know less than the Chinese do about our tactics. So that's the other thing that strikes me. We're still being kept in the dark. We're still not being told what's going on. And the third thing that's interesting is that this is actually an old Cold War tactic, where the superpowers, the then superpowers, discussed what they had, put everything on the table, if you will, about their nuclear weapons. And the thought was that if you knew the extent of the danger, you wouldn't mess around with us. And we're hoping that the same thing will happen now with these cyber attack strategies.
Do you feel we're doing that a lot, though, going back to these Cold War tactics? I mean, it seems to be the new...
Really?
Well, it's the new
seems
black.
To be, well, this is true. I mean, part of it is that we are in a new Cold War. It's just a new one, but with slightly different players, perhaps.
Well, what do you mean?
Redefined players. You know, the whole world is shifting. The rules, nobody's playing by any rules of international law or decorum or statesmanship or anything like that anymore. And so, you know, we're not saber-rattling with a naval embargo around a nuclear missile in Cuba, but we're our weapons are now invisible because it's all in cyberspace, and we are engaged in this conversation with these folks saying, don't do this, we'll do this to you, blah, blah, blah. But it's a new kind of Cold War where our security is very much at risk.
Then what happens is you're telling me that we have to be preemptive before somebody does something.
I'm not. I think we've already been preemptive. I don't think that that's the case. I think we're already. But, you know, one of the things this article in the Times talked about is that the Chinese weren't going for our military secrets as much as they were going after our corporate.
Oh, by the way,
information.
That is really where whatever competition is. You know, there's an old saying about give a surgeon a knife.
And he'll take an arm.
And you give a surgeon a knife, they're going to use the knife. You know, that's what they do. I got beaten up the other day because I said something about some health practitioners who shall not be named here, health practitioners who are not allowed to prescribe, so they prescribe a lot of, vitamins.
And then I got
a nasty letter.
Right, yeah.
How dare you say that? We prescribe vitamins because they're good for people. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So we have this infrastructure in this country, and it comes out of the Cold War. We spent billions and billions of dollars on our defense. And are you telling me that, like the surgeon, we're not going to use the knife?
Yeah, I'm actually interested to hear you and Libby talk about this because we've had battles here before, verbal battles, of course.
Sure.
About how
it's civilized
poorly. I do treat you poorly,
but I do
yes,
not
because
take
you
offense.
Deserve it. Your well, ideas are defective.
Yeah, isn't it? Aren't they though?
And right. One of them.
But it gets you going, doesn't it?
One of those defective ideas is that it's worth giving up our civil rights in order to be safer.
Oh no! Do you
and
think
and
Libby
Edward
said
Snowden.
I haven't
yes,
said that.
I think you have frequently said that. Yes,
who said that, me?
That people support giving up civil liberties for the sake of protection.
And I think you and I agree that he should be tried for treason.
Who? Oh, yeah. Edward
Snowden.
No, that's giving up his civil rights. We've talked about giving up our own rights.
Are you suggesting...
Can I talk? No, don't.
Oh, we never let you talk.
Make them let me finish.
All right. Finish your comment. Finish up your comment.
But your point is actually well taken and was
see, it was worth letting.
Okay, I still haven't finished it.
No.
And it was first expressed also by Edward Snowden, who said, don't be mistaken in thinking that all of these NSA activities are about protecting you. They're not. They are about money. Mm-hmm. This is about corporations. It's about getting corporate secrets. It's not just the Chinese who do that. We do it, too. We just call it national security. And the last cyber attack that we did against a Chinese firm was under the name of seeing what they were doing about our going after us. It was all corporate. This is about money, as everything is.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, God, you're being so compliant today.
Wow.
I'm going back to my corner. That's right.
I'd say you won that round.
Right. Thank you.
I say she lost that round.
Ding, ding, ding. You know, the fact of the matter is that everything is coming down to money.
All right. A
you
tie.
Know, China has become this major world economic force as a communist country, which is a joke. And it's always come down to money. Any war has always been about money.
Yes, and who controls so much of the Chinese economic system? The military in China do.
It's fascism.
So there you get a sort of a potential crossover. But we do have all this apparatus, and damned if we're not going to use it.
Alan, my new thing today is the writing of Stephen Kinzer. He's coming into Albany today as part of the Writers Institute. 20 years.
He'll be on the show tomorrow.
Great. Yeah. 20 years as a foreign correspondent for the New York Times. And he is an expert on coups and revolutions and the sort of overthrows of governments that we've seen around the world. And he's been at many of those places. And the major player, the major cause of all of these has to be the United States. So for us to blame China is really crazy. We're the ones who have done that. We have the Dulles brothers. His latest book is about the Dulles brothers who did this during the Cold War. One brother was the head of the CIA.
Allen and John Foster.
And the other was the Secretary of State, exactly. And together they corporatized. They helped with the corporatization of America and, you know, the spread of their power and the advancement of corporation interests over our own. And that led to war and revolution. Mm-hmm. We have an interventionist foreign policy.
Well,
we talk about democracy, but we don't deliver.
And do we know? Well, we certainly knew about Iran, and we certainly knew about putting the Shah on the peacock throne. A lot of this stuff comes out many years after the fact. But doesn't mean that we're still not doing it. One has to really wonder, in certain very contemporary revolutions, whether we had a hand in making
Kinzer says we stirred the pot in Ukraine. Exactly. And we talked here last week, Alan, about the Twitter little scheme, the USAID Twitter scheme in Cuba. That was certainly aimed at hurting the communist government in Cuba, or whatever kind of government it is now.
Well, it's Voice of America, but it's just a different
version.
No,
USAID did this.
But it's, you know what I'm saying.
It's
Voice of America was propaganda when you only use the radio. Now it's they're using the
social media,
the web, and social media.
I take your point, Libby. You were just laying out the
thank you so much, the
way that works.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
boy, I'm moving on this side.
Yeah. All right.
These guys are in cahoots.
It's getting sick.
Suddenly, it's
I'm a big fan of Libby. That's true, and of yours, Rosemary. but you know, I thought we promised the Castros. You know, one reads about this stuff that after the Bay of Pigs, there were certain agreements made, and one of them was no more invasions.
Yeah,
you know,
invasions,
no more
assassination attempts,
no more exploding cigars in Castro's face, and no more this kind of stuff.
So we disagreed about this, and I read the Washington Post editorial. Yeah. I commend it to you today. They take your side on it, saying, "Okay, it's kind of a dumb idea. It didn't work. We admit that we didn't fund it, et cetera." But what's so wrong about going after a communist government, a dictatorship? What's so wrong about trying to unsettle that? And that has been American policy since
Cold War. Before George Washington.
Probably.
So real quick, in Beijing, the defense secretary, quote, is going to stress to the Chinese that we in the military are going to be as transparent as possible, said Rear Admiral John Kirby, the Pentagon press secretary, and we want the same openness and transparency and restraint from them. So what do we get out of this meeting with Hagel in China tomorrow?
Well, it sounds like they may have some objections to the way we're doing business. And they're heading them off at the pass. Of course, the Chinese aren't innocents. We're not innocents.
Right, but it just seems to me that we're in a defensive position. You know, it just seems like we're going in there, the apologist in some way.
Well, something happened that we don't know about.
Right,
we just don't know about what the something was.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and I love the idea that the press secretary for the Chinese is the admiral.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The U.S. also just came out on the side of Japan in a feud that China and Japan are having on islands in the ocean between them. And that's, I believe, part of this, too. We're positioning ourselves definitely defensively against and vis-a-vis China.
Yeah, well, we do know that Obama said that he wanted to change the strategy of American foreign policy more towards the Pacific Rim. And here you go.
Right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion and welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. Tickets now available Saturday, March 28th for Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, in concert in the Pavilion, Saturday, June 20th at 7, bethelwoodscenter.org. And Haldora Rheinbeck Women's Clothing Designs, sewn in upstate New York. Natural fabrics of linen, silk, and cotton, featuring Hanro of Switzerland undergarments, Vaubel Jewelry, haldora.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion. We have a few minutes before we go over to a news break, an NPR news break. And before we do that, I want to get to another topic. Let's talk about the voting in Afghanistan that took place over the weekend. Afghanistan's presidential election got high turnout, but many still voted along ethnic lines. As ballots were tallied Sunday from Afghanistan's presidential election, many voters hoped that the country was moving into a new era marked by its first democratic handover of power. But early returns in Kabul pointed to the enduring power of ethnic politics. Oh, yeah. And I guess there's...
Well, let's go to Rosemary because, you know, she's our foreign policy expert.
The foreign policy. I'm very
interested.
It's
not a spying.
I do not work for the CIA. Interesting election. I thought that any conclusion that ended with Karzai out of there would be a good one, however it ended up. His clear favorite, though, in the race, his former minister, is like third. If the polling and the checks on the poll are correct, we won't really have the count for another month or more out of Afghanistan. It's so corrupt.
That's always troubling.
Yeah, yeah. Very troubling. And there's lots so of monitors, much, yeah. And it's still a mess.
And one truck traveling along with the ballots was blown up, and three people killed.
Yeah,
two AP staffers, right. a German photographer who's one of the best war photographers like of all times. And a reporter. She's Canadian. She was shot. She's in stable condition. I haven't seen new reports on her. Photographer was killed instantly.
Yeah, right.
They were in a line, this was last week, of reporters following at the elections. And they were protected by police. It was someone dressed as a police, if not a police officer, who walked up and yelled, you know, glory to God in Arabic, and shot, opened up fire on just the women. Well, so they were targeted.
Yeah. But back to Joe's point, which I really think, or somebody's point anyway, I'm getting old, is the very interesting concept of groups, of group voting behavior, tribal voting behavior. And the reason I'm so interested in that is because I think we do it too.
Of course we do.
I mean, I don't think we do it the same way. We don't have the Pashtuns and the this and that.
No, we have our own.
Okay, there is a difference, though.
Oh, sure.
In the United States, our groups are, we have a sense of fairness and rightness that, okay, everybody's got to be treated the same. Your group has to be treated the same as me. And if you get more, then I'm annoyed because I want it too.
Right.
But in Afghanistan and in places over there where I work, where
you
I
know,
work
like
with
Florida.
Reporters. Yeah, there too. No. Even in Florida.
And hanging chairs.
Here's the thing is, they think it's perfectly fine for one group to be favored. And they want their group to be that one. They aspire to be the group that gets corruption. Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than everybody's treated fairly, no, you have to be the elite.
Well,
so Karzai's one value, which we didn't see because he was so evil in many ways, very corrupt, stupid to the United States. I hate his policy towards the United States. But he did keep those groups in check. He is like the Tito or the Khrushchev in those countries. He kept all these groups together.
Which, by the way, hence is part of his strategy of dissing the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because by dissing the United States, you keep
the enemy.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. Right.
So with Karzai gone, are we seeing the end of that? And Afghanistan could fracture as well as many other countries that we've seen that we've worked with over there.
Well, it's always been a tinderbox. There is no question about it. And it's always been something that strategically has been so important that everybody takes a try at it. The Russians take a try at it. The United States takes a try at it.
British started it.
British, certainly, all of those great films. So took a try at it. But you're right. And there's something so strategic about it that the great powers think it has to be controlled. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversations. We are going to get an NPR news break, and then we'll be back with our discussion. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And before we get started on other conversations, we have letters.
We do. But first, a notice, just so that everybody knows, the WAMC transmitter in Ticonderoga, New York, WANC 103.9 FM, is off the air. We're working on it day and night. What else can I tell you about that? except nothing. And now for...
What did you say? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, what?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay.
Did you say 103.9?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I did. Okay, so, but I never remember what I said 2 seconds before.
That's okay.
Okay, so then...
Okay,
then we heard from Tony. Tell Libby only one crime is mentioned in the Constitution. Treason basically means violent warlike revolt. Libby should not ape Ann Coulter and the wacko right.
Thank you. People think I'm mean to you.
I know, because everybody, there was another guy who called me the Fred Dicker of WIMC, that I'm so far to the left, so there you go.
See, there you go. Okay, so then... then Mattman called and said, agreed, the old one, knowledge is power, applies big time. Above, also a great new band name, Invisible Weapons. See?
And the other thing about the Constitution is that keeps getting reinterpreted, so maybe, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
You know, there is that.
And then we had one from the other day, Joe. Fort Hood shootings. I listened to the roundtable discussion on the topic on Friday. After more facts have been revealed about a dispute regarding a denied leave to Mr. Lopez, this begins to look like an incident of workplace violence, as in the going postal events in the past. I know a lot of people work for the post office who really have grave problems with when people use the idiom going postal.
My father worked for the post office.
Yeah.
And he was a good, decent civil servant.
Man.
And a man. Yeah. And he was a good man.
Yeah, gotcha.
And he worked very, very hard. But it was before the days of... He worked in the registry room where they actually had to write out everything. This was the days before computerization.
I hate to prolong this agony.
But I
will say that there is a point at which the political scientists and the public administrators took over all bureaucracy, and they decided that they were going to make bureaucracy into the perfect place to work. There was a box, either you fit into the box or you didn't,
yeah.
And they made all of that. And then what happened was that didn't work. People weren't always happy with those professional decisions of bureaucratizing.
Mm-hmm.
So are you all on board with what I'm talking about, or shall we just move ahead?
In terms of
I understand what you're talking about. State government or the post office?
No, all of it. The post office, anything mm-hmm. else that has a bureaucracy, you take a test, you get in. Either you're in the box or you're not, or the box isn't right. We're here at WAMC, for example. Turns out Joe Donahue has 3,000 talents. So we use them for the roundtable, and we use them to basically help us make every decision that we make in the place. But in the post office, that probably would have been impossible because the box wasn't there.
Okay, yes? If we continue this, I might go postal.
Oh, okay.
We have a lot of news today.
That's nice.
That's a sort of put down.
Yeah.
What's more, it's a sort of a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe a deserved shot, but a shot.
Maybe, yeah. Used.
So you know who your friends are. You know who loves you, baby.
Yes, absolutely.
It's on this side of the table.
I know that. Let us go to other stories. And Libby, I'll set this up for you.
Oh, great.
Because I know this is something that you wanted to talk about, having to do with the Paul Ryan budget that was proposed, the House Budget Committee. They've come up with their budget. They have released their budget. And a part of that is a recommendation that the federal government not have a role in libraries and that Congress shift the federal agency's responsibilities to the private sector in the 2015 fiscal year budget resolution. Should mention that Libby does a lot of work with libraries throughout the state of New York and elsewhere.
Libby does. You're on a board, a library board.
I am.
Rosemary's on a library board. I'm not, so I'm the most objective of the four.
But you've gone to a library.
Once or twice.
I love libraries.
Yeah, well, that's it. Okay, so.
Well, you know, the idea of this is one more thing he wants to privatize. He wants the entire government to be under the private sector so we can do like they did at the post office, and then we'll all go postal from every single thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, I really don't like that term.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
fine.
Stop.
But before, be that as it may, the idea that you're going to privatize information like that, you know, a library is the last bastion where anybody, it's the last bastion of democracy. Anyone can walk in regardless of race, religion, sexual orientation, economic status, get the information for free, get access to information.
You're right.
Transform their lives.
Except if the library isn't open.
Well, yes, Alan.
I'm not going to start on my great
Yeah, let's not start on that. That has to do with the amount of money governments provide for libraries for operating so that they could actually stay open. I think that there are a lot of libraries who would stay open 24/7 if they could. And they are on the web.
So you're
that as it may, you know, okay, so now we're going to give the library management and the library's funding and all this sort of stuff over to the private sector where it's all going to be profit-driven, and so access to information is going to be all about how you can make a profit.
As Pete wrote, oh, when will they ever learn?
Right.
You take the libraries, the most beloved institutions in America, and you attack them. Mm-hmm. You take Social Security, and you attack it.
They really are
You
idiots.
Take Medicare, which has done so much for all of us, and you attack it. What is with these people? I don't get it.
They rebrand themselves.
And then when they lose a presidential election, they say, how'd that happen?
Right. You know, their attempt to rebrand themselves as gentler and kindler and all this sort of stuff, and that goes into what we're going to talk about on the presidential race, I'm sure we're going to get to.
Yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter is they are once again alienating a base that they're trying to go after and to make it seem like they really are on their side. But this is obviously that they're not. You take the libraries away from people. You take that funding away. You take the ability for the federal government to support very important library services like summer reading programs and things like that. What's going to happen?
Well, Rosemary, what do you think?
Oh, I have already said, I think, that the Paul Ryan budget is mean and horrible. I mean, if they're not going to give milk to babies or food to poor children,
and now they're gonna get
what makes you think that he would give
story
books,
time.
You know? Yeah,
right.
Story time. It's ridiculous.
Except that, think about this. Libraries, in many ways, I know you guys will jump down my throat, but in many ways are middle-class institutions which did incredible things for all of us.
Right. They raised a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I studied constantly until 10 o'clock till they kicked me out of the library.
Sure.
But I understand the Ryan philosophy, which goes after milk for children and for poor people and for, you know, putting 30 million people on getting health care for the first time, or the potential for their getting health care for the first time. But I think they're making a political mistake by going after a middle class institution like libraries.
Well, I'll let you go, but I think we're probably going to say the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yes, in a global perspective, but let me tell you, I'm working in Mount Vernon for the library down there right now to get a $4.35 million operating budget passed. You walk into that library, there's not a lot of middle class people.
No,
working
no, no.
class, working poor.
But Libby, I know, I know. That's all very.
Library.
That's all very nice, and Joe, that's all very nice. But what I'm saying to you is,
well, it is
that all of us who have used libraries all of our lives become the purple vote. That vote between the Democrats and the Republicans that they have to get in order to win elections. And when you say to Alan Chartok, who believes in libraries because they were there for me, maybe when people didn't have money, but who often have money now and who will remember and vote on the basis.
But they're coming from the perspective of, what do we need libraries for? We have Google.
Okay. And we're talking about the people who don't have Google.
Right.
No.
Yeah, many.
No,
many,
no. You're talking about part of the picture. Yeah. But the picture
I think it's a pretty large part,
I think
though.
The purples, though, Alan,
yes.
How are they even aware of what's not in that budget? What they see, what the Republicans are very good at promoting and Democrats are very bad at refuting, is that this is a budget that will get rid of our deficit. Deficits are bad.
Guess what?
And we cut out everything that we don't need, and we keep the one thing that is in the Constitution, which is national security. There's money for the military.
Yes,
in this.
But guess what? There are tens of thousands of people who are listening to this broadcast right now, and they know full well now that Ryan has done that. You're right. Mm-hmm. He might have gotten away with it, but if the New York Times is talking about it, and if we're talking about it, it's one more thing that they do that I think that takes a bite out of their behind.
Oh, okay. I think it just adds to their inability to speak to and care about anybody who's different from themselves. And I'll just one thing I want to add, and that is this, and I talked about my dad before. He was a working class guy, never graduated college, never graduated high school, read the New York Times every day. And his thing, what he always used to say to us was, you know, information is power, like you used to say, but the people in charge don't want us to have the information, because if we have the information, that means we'll be able to make some informed decisions.
Still happening.
Yep. Yep. And this is all about information.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll go to your letters, and we welcome your letters at roundtable@wamc.org. Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, Alan Chartok, all here. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Waterville Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. The law offices of Diana Bangert Drowns, downtown Albany, practicing matrimonial and family law for 29 years, welcoming new clients interested in the collaborative divorce process, 518-432-1243. And Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com.
Article in the New York Times this weekend: with eyes increasingly on him, Jeb Bush signaled on Sunday the kind of campaign he would mount if he runs for president, one arguing against ideological purity tests while challenging party orthodoxy on issues like immigration and education. Even as he sharply criticized President Obama and his handling of foreign affairs and health care, Mr. Bush made clear that he would run against the style of politics that has characterized recent Republican nominating contests. He said he would decide by the end of the year, in part, on whether he thinks he could avoid, quote, the vortex of a mud fight with a hopeful message.
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, the Clintons and the Bushes are now best friends. And they go around together, and they and the two past presidents do all kinds of promos and everything else. My feeling is that Jeb has probably been on the phone with Papa and discussing what this would look like. They're all ticked off at the way in which the radical right has been ruining
the party.
Their politics. Yeah. What'd you say?
It's hijacked the party.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so I think when he's saying this right now, it'd be very interesting. He would be a popular candidate. As far as I know, he would be the most popular candidate that I have heard here. We like our politics. Side. We like our you know, our family politics, the Kennedys, the Clintons,
the legacies.
Yeah. Right. And I think he sounds like a reasonable man who has always eschewed running for the presidency, and nobody really knows why. We think we know some of the answers, but nobody really knows why.
So if you take what he says,
yes,
if he can avoid the vortex of a mud fight. Well, I don't care who you are. No one's going to be able to do that, right?
Well, I think he wants to. I mean, I think it's a brilliant positioning.
Means he's not going to run.
Is he married? No, I'm not so sure.
He's married to a Colombian woman.
A Hispanic woman at a time when that party is being killed on this issue.
He's very favorable on, he has pushed the party on immigration. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. So he may just be one of those guys who presents himself as wanting to do the right stuff. Right now. Now, we tend to vilify people who are in other parties and doing different things. But again, it's all about the purples. It's all about the reasonable people, you know, in the country. So if I think he positions himself well, and I think Hillary's got to be sitting there a little bit worried right now.
Okay, so if you take him at his word that he wants to avoid this vortex of a mud fight, and you come out as, let's just use the word reasonable, and you are more progressive on some social issues than the average Republican candidate. You have views that are considered by many to, again, sure, the purples. So then you go through a primary campaign.
You may have to.
And
where people remember the Bushes, and where people want to win.
Well,
they
right, but you're going against that. You're going against also the far right of the party.
That's right.
Presumably,
that's right.
Do you not get exactly into that vortex of a mud fight and showing and crystallizing where the problems what the problems of the
party
are.
Well, I think he means, Joe, a mud fight with the Democrats. I don't know that he means
now, see, I thought he meant not getting into that 12 debates with Republicans out there.
I was talking about a hopeful message. I mean, I think he seems to be, like, he doesn't want to get into the fractious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes.
Of the party.
Well, but and let's not forget, it was his brother, and Karl Rove, who brought these whack jobs into the party to begin with, with their you know, they used the radical Christian right around it, around the gay marriage issue specifically, and then choice to bring them into the party.
Wait,
and
I was in Florida when he was governor, and he didn't just it wasn't just his brother. Jeb was part of that. He is part of and has been part of the Bush political establishment. He has a whole belief in bringing faith-based industry, faith-based organizations get his support. His views on immigration are liberal. His views on death at the end of life, how you handle that, are horrible, horrifying.
Right. Yeah.
So, but what he is attractive as, he is a very smart man. He is reasonable. He speaks well, unlike his brother.
And he has the right name.
He has the right name. He's got a political organization that would instantly be in place the minute he declares.
Yeah,
money would come into that.
Of course, if he reinvents himself, which is, after all, what it's all about.
Right.
Andrew Cuomo, son of Mario. Mario, the speaker of the something on the Hill, the city on the Hill, and the rest of it. Now, Andrew is moved far to the right in order to portray himself in a particular kind of way. So now you have to worry about if you're Bush, you have to think, you know, do I need to be another Wendell Willkie? Meaning, now you people all look at me in a very strange way, but Wendell Willkie, of course, began to look and sound like Roosevelt. And therefore, and who needs a second one? Who needs a second one if you're going to vote? So that's where there has to be some balance between what you said, Rosemary, about his conservative credentials and where he's moving to right now.
If he's really going to move, I'm not convinced he's going to run.
No, how can you be convinced?
I kept hoping, or thinking, not hoping, that he would run the last time when the Republicans tried so hard to get anybody except Mitt Romney to run until the very last minute. I thought he might step in and he would have a real chance against Obama. Why he doesn't run, you're right. We don't exactly know. Mm-hmm. It has something to the cost on his family is extensive. His wife doesn't want that. And he's made a ton of money in the private sector. Mm-hmm. So
over seven years. I mean,
yeah,
a long time.
I think he's sincere about it. I think he would be a hellaciously strong candidate for the Republicans. He would have to go, and he, if anyone, could deliver this message of, hey, we used to be something bigger and better. Mitt Romney couldn't do that. He kept moving more and more. Look, he went from Massachusetts to where he did on health care. Look how far to the right he went. Jeb wouldn't have to do that. He could stake it in the middle. He would speak to moderates. Powerful.
We are just about out of time, but I just want to take our final
so quickly
3 minutes and mention that Mickey Rooney has passed away.
Yeah.
93 passed away, and here was a guy that was in show business the 93 years. I believe was in show business for 87 of those years.
Yes.
It was just absolutely incredible.
He's got one of my best lines, my favorite lines. My dad's got a barn, let's put on a play. And it works in so many different settings.
For four movies.
Of course.
I like him because he was a short guy and he didn't have a Napoleonic complex. He married 8 women, including Ava Gardner. You go.
And Ava Gardner, of course, Frank Sinatra and all like that.
Right. And you don't think he had a Napoleonic complex?
No, sir.
Eight times?
Well, you people are all the same. You look at every guy who's
everything.
Short. You look at everybody who's short and say he's got a Napoleonic complex.
Well, take your hand out of your
and
shirt, Alan.
Don't think I don't know.
The Andy Hardy films,
yes.
They were showing.
Judy Garland.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
such
great
stuff.
Garland. Wow.
They were great.
And that's, he's not really even of my generation. It's my mother's generation, but I still loved him. And that's he had a gift. Big
he did.
Gift.
Babes on Broadway.
Yeah, I remember when he was hawking
Sugar Babies.
Yeah. He was hawking the Pocono Inn on
that's
CBS
right.
News when we were kids. Yep. Yep, on the radio.
Ah, his legacy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hey, he lost all those millions. He had to make money.
Again, Mickey Rooney passed away.
Good life.
At 93. Yeah, you know, and it's yet another one of those. We said this with Shirley Temple. We say it with Mickey Rooney, where that golden age of Hollywood is you know, clearly passed. Mm-hmm. And you know, I can't really. I think we did this with...
Yeah, in 30 years, will they be talking about, wow, Christian Slater or whatever, or who's still there? Who would we say this about? Justin Timberlake is dead today.
No,
oh,
but
dear.
You know, you say like 50 years. I mean, you say, would you say it about George Clooney or Tom Hanks? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think
Tom
we would.
Hanks,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Okay.
Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Jack Nicholson, of course, yeah. A little bit more of a holdover of a... Of,
okay, you convinced me.
Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Clint Eastwood. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of names there. Just go on the films.
Okay,
just the
fine.
Films alone, okay?
All right. Great.
What's...
Well, that's right. I mean, we're saying, we're doing a homage here to
yes,
a
right.
man
just
who had lots of problems.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, we are out of time. I thank everyone who wrote in. We'd love you to keep the conversation going. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary, Libby, Alan, thank you very much. We'll talk tomorrow.
Yes, okay. We will.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Very much.
Bye-bye now.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.